It's the Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon on the Big 550 KTRS. This is one of my favorite R&B songs. Dan, for $1,000, name the group.
I can't think of it.
The Emotions.
Yeah.
We'll put the $1,000 back in the hopper.
All right.
We'll give our next caller a shot at that later
on.
Thank
you so much.
Remember, when we call you, answer your phone. KTRS is my favorite radio station. Remember those kind of things?
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Hi, KTRS is my favorite radio station. Did you ever get phone calls? Hi, we're doing a radio survey from Neil from Arbitron. Blah, 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 blah. Now, do you work in the media? No. Okay, what's your favorite radio station? KTRS? I listen all day.
Yeah. That song, The Best of My Love by The Emotions, I love it, was produced by...
Why don't you marry it?
It was produced by Maurice White, who was the guy who founded Earth, Wind, and Fire. And those are the Earth, Wind, and Fire horns playing on that song, and other members of the band playing backup behind them. Maurice White died yesterday at the age of 74 years old. He had been suffering with Parkinson's for about 15 years.
Wow.
And that's not a good way to go. And here's a guy who's a real visionary. I mean, Earth, Wind, and Fire, they were a different kind of R&B group when they emerged in the 1970s.
They were so good.
I went to see them last summer with Chicago out at Riverport.
Oh.
And they start off the show with both bands playing together. You got two of the greatest horn sections of all time. I would say those two, plus Tower of Power, Blood, Sweat, and Tears.
Tower of Power, I love those
guys.
That
would be it, right?
Yeah.
They were there, and they all played together, and then Earth, Wind, and Fire played, you know, That's the Way of the World, and Boogie Wonderland, and Shining Star, and September,
now, was he there?
And other stuff. No, he wasn't.
Okay.
He hasn't toured with them for years because of his Parkinson's, but his brother, Verdeen White, who was also one of the founding members, was there. And Philip Bailey is still the lead vocalist. I think these guys are 70 years old.
Philip Bailey is?
Yes.
I remember when he came on the scene, no one really knew who he was when he came on with Phil Collins.
Easy Lover.
Yeah.
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 Earth, Wind, and Fire had been around for a while by that point.
Yeah.
But that was a big crossover hit for them. And they were just terrific. And Philip Bailey was still able to hit those high notes.
Wow.
The ones that where Mariah Carey would go, wow.
Wow.
It was very impressive.
Now, you know, a lot of those bands will drop down a step, drop the key down a step so they can hit those high notes.
No, he was going for it big time.
Cool.
So Maurice White, the man behind Earth, Wind, and Fire, as Colin points out, he was Earth. That's how early he was involved in the development of that band. Colin's here now for the Showbiz segment of the show, brought to you by Window World, the number one replacement window company in the United States, online at windowworldst.louis.com. Hi, Colin. How are you?
Doing well. How are you, Paul?
I'm good. So this is our Showbiz segment of the show, and I know you and I were at the screening of the same movie earlier this week. It's the only one I've seen, because as I pointed out, January and February, I kind of take a lot of time off because there are so many bad movies.
Yeah.
Last week when you weren't here, you were out with bronchitis, I dissed a movie called The Finest Hours, which is a really, really... If you want to see a good Rescue at Sea movie, there are plenty of them. I would recommend The Perfect Storm, although they didn't get rescued. Spoiler alert, they die.
What?
But in The Finest Hours, the rescue is lame and is not worth your time.
No.
So that's the only other movie that I've seen in this calendar year.
Did either one of you see Dirty Grandpa?
No.
Nope.
Not going to ever.
No. Nope.
Okay.
Yeah, I heard horrible things about it. When I saw that it had a 7% rating, 7% rating on Rotten Tomatoes, I said, no, I'm not even going to go see that. It's a joke.
And we were thinking, why is Robert De Niro doing all of these movies? But I think doesn't he owe a lot of back taxes or something?
He must.
Yeah.
He must. It's the only explanation.
Jail would be better.
Yeah.
So the movie that is out this week that we both saw a screening of the other night is called Hail Caesar from the Coen brothers.
Yes, it is. It's their newest movie.
Yeah.
And it's a return to comedy, which is, I don't know, kind of nice. It's been a while since they've done a comedy, and an even longer while since I think they've done a good one.
Now, they're running a lot of commercials for this because George Clooney is the star of this movie. And if you've seen the commercials or if you've seen the trailer for it, it makes it seem like it's a kidnapping movie or a heist movie. But it's actually a satire of old-time movie studios, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. It takes place in the early 1950s, and it follows our main character, who was a real person. This is based off of sort of movie studios of the day. Eddie Mannix was a fixer. He went around and solved problems at these studios, made certain things were shooting properly, everything was moving ahead. And this story centers a I say centers, and we're going to talk about how it doesn't really center on anything.
Yeah.
But the title of the movie, Hail Caesar, is actually the title of what they call their prestige picture. It's the biggest movie of the year. And this is back in the day when studios signed actors to appear in just movies. They got to say, you're going to be in this movie, you're going to be in this movie.
Yeah.
So
they were under contract.
Yes.
And the studio kind of owned them and also managed their images.
Yes, that was a big part of it. And so Eddie Mannix, Josh Brolin, plays this guy who makes... Again, he actually is on set making certain that things get shot. But when someone needs to go dry out, as they say in this movie,
mm-hmm.
Because everyone, I guess, was an alcoholic in Hollywood in the 50s.
Yeah.
Josh Brolin has to find someone to fill in for them or find a way to make certain that the public doesn't hear about it. George
right.
Clooney plays the golden child of Capitol Studios, Baird Whitlock.
What a great name.
Oh, yes. It's
that's a 1940s movie star name, Baird
yes.
Whitlock.
And you'll notice everything feels right to the time, and that's because the Coens love movies.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they love movies, and this is sort of their... This is as close as they'll get to Tarantino and paying homage to, like, movies.
Mm-hmm.
They're going back at all these movies they loved from the 50s, and trying to toss as many of those types of movies in here. So we
yeah.
have the Western with the singing cowboy.
Yeah, like a Gene Autry or a Roy Rogers.
And this is played, I cannot pronounce,
Alden Ehrenreich.
Yeah. Ehrenreich.
He plays a singing cowboy named Hobie Doyle.
You've never seen him before in anything.
No.
He steals the show in this movie.
I agree.
Every scene he is in, you're watching him.
Yeah. By the way, just let me pause for just a second here. Seeing these things in this movie made me think, what was wrong with America that we all of a sudden, for about 5 years, loved singing cowboy movies? Have you ever seen a Gene Autry or Roy Rogers movie? They're terrible. The songs are terrible. They're not cowboys in the way you want to see them in Westerns. They're just goofballs.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what the Coen brothers have this Hobie character doing in this movie.
And he is so very good. I hope that he actually, like, learned to use a lasso, as mm-hmm. he does in the movie, because it's fun. Then, for those of you who are big movie nerds, Loretta Young, I'm going to toss that out there, because they pay homage to something that happened in the real world. Scarlett Johansson plays this Loretta Young.
No, she actually plays an Esther Williams
yes.
kind of character.
But her story is inspired by Loretta Young,
yes.
where... she gets pregnant out of wedlock, and they have to find a way to solve that problem.
Because it's a horrible... In the 1940s and early 1950s, when this movie takes place, you can't have a pregnant movie star who's not married.
That's, mm-hmm.
Because it was just unheard of.
Yes. You wouldn't do that.
The studio, who she's under contract to, they have to manage it, and that's what this Eddie Mannix has to do. He has to figure out a way to solve this. Otherwise, you've got a huge image problem.
Yes. So that's one of the sort of stories. George Clooney is kidnapped, and it's not spoiling anything, really. He's kidnapped by a group of communists,
mm-hmm.
because why not? It's mm-hmm. the 1950s.
Right.
Ralph Fiennes is a director who's putting on a la-di-da sort of high society movie.
Ralph Fiennes.
Hobie Doyle is brought in to fill in an actor who needs to dry out.
They take the singing cowboy and put him into a tuxedo and put him into one of those drawing room kind of comedies. Again, straight out of the 1940s.
Mm-hmm. Tilda Swinton plays two characters, mm-hmm. gossip columnists,
mm-hmm.
twin sisters who are trying to one-up one another.
Yeah.
Frances McDormand plays the cigarette-smoking film editor who sits in a room. Cece Calhoun, who I believe was... the actual editor of this movie, her real name.
Oh, really?
I think so. It's one of those things I saw in that.
In this movie, she reminded me of an old character actress named Selma Diamond. Remember her? She was on Night Court.
Okay. Yeah.
She had this kind of a voice.
Yeah. I know you're talking about Night Court's a little before me.
I forgot you're 10.
Yeah, sorry. I wasn't allowed to stay
up. He knows Loretta Young, but he doesn't know Night Court.
Well, I wasn't allowed to stay up late enough to watch Night Court.
Yeah, it was at 8:30.
It was bedtime. it's a huge cast. Channing Tatum plays a musical star,
yes.
A very sort of Danny Kaye, I don't know.
It's a more of a Gene Kelly kind
of thing. Gene Kelly,
yeah. And they're actually doing a scene where he's a sailor and there are a bunch of other singers and they were in a bar and they do a full-on musical number, singing and dancing and tap dancing on top of tables and all that. It's right out of a Gene Kelly movie like On the Town or something like that.
And Jonah Hill, I think, is probably the most criminally underutilized character in all this because the few scenes he was on, I really liked his character. Yeah. But if you're noticing, it's a huge cast and they all have different things. That's my biggest issue with this movie is the structure. If it had been more of a vignette where they show us what this person is doing and Eddie Mannix comes in and out of their lives, I would have liked that, seeing him fix multiple things. But him being tied up with this one thing and then just having all this wackiness around it.
Well, he's kind of involved in the Scarlett Johansson thing.
He's kind of
involved in the Channing Tatum thing.
But it doesn't... I wanted it to have more of a closed feel for each story.
Oh, I see.
It just... It felt disjointed the way it was. It was inconsistent. There were things that were very, very funny in this.
Yeah, very.
Very funny.
Yeah.
But then there were times when you could tell they were going for something, and people weren't certain if they were supposed to laugh or just watch. And so you get a scene that's a minute or 2 minutes long where something funny is happening, but no one's laughing because you're jarred by it. There's such quick changes in what's happening. And that's really my biggest issue with the movie is the overall structure. But... Mm-hmm. If you're a Coen Brothers fan and like their comedy, I think there's going to be plenty for you to like in this.
I have a question here. I'm old enough to have seen a lot of movies in my day, but the movies that they're satirizing here, I'm not that familiar with because I'm not old enough to have seen movies when they came out in the 30s and 40s. Now, I've seen some of them in... remember they did a retrospective movie called That's Entertainment? Which was kind of clips from all the big Hollywood musicals of that era. I don't know if it was Warner Brothers or MGM or somebody put that together. There were a couple of them. And it was just, you know, one musical scene from a movie after one right after the other. And some of the dramas as well. I never saw the Gene Autry singing cowboy movies all the way through. But I've seen pieces of them in clips. The same thing with an Esther Williams movie. I never saw the ones where she was singing and swimming and being a mermaid and diving and all those things simultaneously. Stupid ideas, but I've seen clips of them, so I'm aware of it.
Yes.
However, and there's always a however in life. Do you think enough of the contemporary movie audience knows those references? I mean, I'm on the fringe, outside edge of a generation that might be aware of that sort of stuff. I wasn't alive when it was there, but I've seen it. But you're all in your... I mean, you and Ian, you're in your 30s. You've never heard of any of these people, right?
No.
You've never seen any
just
of their movies?
Just because every now and then I'll turn on Turner Classic Movies and watch something older.
Okay.
If you're a Turner Classic Movies fan, boom.
Okay.
You are going to get every reference in this movie.
Okay. So that demographic is 55 plus.
Yes.
So does anybody under 55, or let's make it 35, does the 18 to 35 demographic that goes to the movies more than any other... Are they going to be able to go to this movie and say, oh, yeah, I see what that's a reference to?
No, but then again, I don't think the Coens have ever relied on that demographic to make popular comedies. That demographic wouldn't get Fargo. Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou? They may have just read the Iliad and the Odyssey. You know, they may have read those things. So
No Country for Old Men, that was a big hit.
It was, but it's not a comedy. I'm talking about specifically their comedies.
But I got Fargo at that time. Well, when did that come out? Almost 20 years ago, maybe?
Yeah. It was 96. You were a teenager.
Yeah.
I'm saying that's not the typical... They don't bank on that demo for their comedies to be hits.
All right.
Like Barton Fink, Hudsucker Proxy. No, I mean,
were those
18-year-olds.
Hits?
No, but most 18-year-olds aren't relying... The Coens don't have, like, huge blockbuster
hits.
Well,
Fargo and No Country for Old Men, those both qualify as hits.
Yeah, but that's out of, like, 20...
So what's the demo for this movie? Is it the 55-plus?
No, I think it's...
What do you mean, us? You're in your 30s.
Adults, like, 30-somethings and up, I'd say. And even 20-somethings would get it, I think. It's just... It's a movie for Coen Brother fans. If you're not a Coen Brother fan and you go see this, this isn't going to win you over. This isn't the movie that does that. But I think it's a solid movie... I think that they were, I guess, smart putting it out when there's not a lot of competition around.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know.
What do you give it on a scale of 10?
I've liked it more the further I am from it. I give it a 7.
Okay, I give it a 7.5.
Yeah.
So we're about the same. I will say, and I said this to somebody as I walked out of the theater that night, why did we need a narrator for that movie? They have Michael Gambon, who was the second Dumbledore in the Harry Potter movies. They have him doing voiceover narration in this movie. Completely unnecessary.
Yeah, but it was kind of fun when I thought back on it.
It's a distraction.
Yeah, but it was so ridiculous. It sort of added to that whole sort of fairy tale quality, looking back at the golden age of cinema thing. It's very much, and oh, the best scene in it. Oh, Hail Caesar, to give you an idea, is a story of Romans returning home at the time that it's a story of Jesus, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
This is their story of Jesus piece.
It's their come to Jesus piece.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And there's a scene when they sit down with three priests and a rabbi to determine if there's anything offensive
in
this movie.
The Josh Brolin character, Eddie Mannix, who, by the way, is a very strict Roman Catholic.
Yes.
Goes to confession about every hour and a half.
Yes.
I'm exactly. Serious.
Oh, yes.
And this scene where they want to find out if Hail Caesar is going to be offensive because they don't want to offend anybody of any religion. And so they have a rabbi, a Greek Orthodox mm-hmm. priest, a Roman Catholic priest, and
Methodist, I think he said.
Yeah, some Protestant denomination. And they're there. That may be the highlight scene of the movie.
It might be. But it's funny. You're going to laugh.
Yeah.
It's not gross out humor at all. It's just funny.
The character that Josh Brolin plays reminded me of the character in the Judy Garland, James Mason version of A Star is Born from 1954 that was played by Jack Carson. He played Libby, who was the head of publicity for a big studio and also the fixer who had to do exactly the same stuff that he does in this. Mm-hmm. So there's a nice little parallel there. All right, so we both give Hail Caesar a 7, 7.5.
Seven-ish.
Somewhere in there. Also opening up this weekend, movies we haven't seen, but you can fill people in on what they are.
The Choice.
The Choice.
Nicholas Sparks.
Okay, that's enough.
There you go. So, yep.
There's your 18 to 34 female demographic right there.
Yeah.
If you like The Notebook, you might like this.
And their significant others. That's the other half of it. Two tickets. You're going to get dragged to this one, guys.
I am not going to get dragged. Well, fortunately for me, I'm not married to a woman who's going to drag me to see The Choice.
Yes.
So that's a good thing.
And the other one is Pride and Prejudice and Zombies.
Based on the book by Jane Austen.
Yes, and then a remaking of the book actually called Pride and Prejudice and Zombies.
There's a book called Pride and Prejudice and Zombies?
They did this to a series of classic books where they added zombies to them.
I got to tell you, I'm not into Jane Austen novels or the movies based upon them, and I'm not into zombie movies at all. But I love the, I'm not going to go see this, but I love the fact that somebody said, let's take some old classics and turn them into zombie movies. That's hysterical.
Yeah. Why not? Yeah, they wrote these, and
what do you know about it?
That it apparently pretty closely follows the story of Pride and Prejudice, and it has zombies. And
well, we got that,
and
Colin.
The daughters are trained.
You didn't even look it up on Wikipedia, did you? You just went with the title.
The daughters are trained to kill zombies, so they are well equipped for the coming scourge.
Mm-hmm. Are they proud? Are they prejudiced?
No, actually.
Are they zombies? No.
They're modest and accepting.
So that's opening this weekend. Will that do box office?
Why not? Yeah, I mean, there's not like a big, big movie. That's
it's Super Bowl weekend.
Yeah.
So
they're just putting stuff out there.
What about The Lady in the Van starring Maggie Smith?
I didn't even hear that's opening in St. Louis.
Yeah, it's opening today.
Well,
you know
there
anything
we go.
About it?
Nothing. I didn't even heard.
I'm guessing. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to take the example you just gave for Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. It's based on Pride and Prejudice and involves zombies. That was your full description.
The Lady
of
in
it.
The Van?
Yeah, Dan, see if you can figure out. Maggie Smith is the Lady in the Van.
Down by the river.
Oh, gosh.
In a world.
In a world. Down by the river. There's a lady in a van.
In a van. And she's played by Maggie Smith.
With a red light outside. What is she doing in there? If this van's rocking, don't bother knocking.
There's probably zombies.
Yes. So those are the movies. Next week we have the Valentine's movies. I will watch them for you. So you will have Deadpool to look forward to, the comic book movie,
okay.
And Zoolander 2 to look forward to.
All right.
Reviews of those.
A couple of other showbiz things to mention. One is that this week Louis C.K. surprised a lot of people by issuing his new TV show on his website, with no advance word. Now, it's not a concert film. It's a TV show that is written, stars in, and directed. It's called Horace and Pete. And he put it on his website, and he sent an email out to people who have bought his stuff online before, and this got on his email list. And he said, hey, I did this TV show. It's $5. If you want to, you can watch it. He didn't even tell you what it was. He didn't try to tease people. He just figured people who like me might check this out. Well, I like him. So I paid him $5, and I watched it. And it is not a comedy. It's an hour-long drama that stars Louis C.K. and Steve Buscemi as Horace and Pete, who own a bar. Not like Cheers, but more of a rundown dive of a bar. And Alan Alda is in it, playing a curmudgeonly old guy who is related to them in some way, and is the bartender there, and is racist and opinionated and misogynist and just, you know, the grumpy old man of the bar. Alan Alda's in it. Jessica Lange has a role in it. Edie Falco is in it. Stephen Wright plays one of the regulars in the bar. That's quite a cast.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when it came out and I paid $5 for it, my wife didn't watch it with me, but she said, so was that worth it? I said, yeah, I like Louie and I like all those actors and it wasn't great. She said, well, would you watch it again? I said, I don't know if it's a pilot or if it was a one-off or what it was. I've never heard of somebody producing a TV show and then putting it out there but not telling anybody except, look, I did a show. Here, pay me $5 and you can watch it. Have you ever heard of that before?
No, that's a new one.
I've heard of
it. Yeah, I'm on the email list, and I had no idea what it was till you just mentioned it right now, because I didn't research to see what it was.
Neither did I. I did no research. I just downloaded it and watched it, and that's why I can tell you about it here today. Now, I know that there have been times where studios have made TV shows, and they were horrible, and then the network agreed to run it in the summer and burn it off, you know, like on a Thursday night with no promotion. What's this half-hour sitcom that's coming on here? Well, it's the sitcom that's never going to go anywhere. It's a pilot that wasn't picked up to become a series, and they burn it off. But that's not what this is, because I got another email. Did you get the second email from Louis?
Yes. I don't remember what it says now, though.
But he says, Horace and Pete is a new show I'm producing, directing, writing, distributing, and financing on my own.
Whoa.
Now, that's new. Right,
yeah,
there.
You don't hear that often.
He says, I have an amazing cast. Everybody I just mentioned, A.D. Bryan from Saturday Night Live is in it as well. Paul Simon wrote the theme song for him. He says, the response to episode one has been great so far, and there are more coming. We're making them now and having a lot of fun doing it. And he says, he explains the strategy. Part of the idea behind launching it on the site was to create a show in a new way and provide it to you directly and immediately without the usual promotion and banner ads and billboards and clips that tell you what the show feels and looks like before you get to see it for yourself. He goes on, as a writer, there's always a weird feeling that as you unfold the story and reveal the characters and the tone, you always know that the audience will never get the benefit of seeing it the way you wrote it because they always know so much before they watch it. As a TV watcher, I'm always delighted when I can see a thing without knowing anything about it because of the promotion. So making this show and just posting it out of the blue gave me the rare opportunity to give you that experience of discovery. He says, we're shooting this in a multi-camera format with an emphasis on a live feeling, and we're able to post it very soon after each episode is shot. I am making this show as you're watching it. So in wow. this email that I got yesterday, because I'm on Louis C.K.'s mailing list, he said, so Saturday, I will post the show we're doing this week.
Wow.
Have you ever heard of that?
No, this is... that's expensive. I'm caught off guard, because that's an expensive thing to do. Production of a television series is expensive to do. That's not... You don't just shoot one take and get it, or... It's multiple takes in TV stitched together, and that's not cheap.
He says, wow. Horace and Pete is a full-on TV production with four broadcast cameras, two beautiful sets, and a state-of-the-art control room, and a very talented and skilled crew and a Hall of Fame cast. Every second the cameras are rolling, money is shooting out of me like your mother's worst diarrhea.
Oh.
And then he says, I know there are less upsetting metaphors I could be using, but I think that one's the sharpest and the most concise. Basically, this is a handmade, one-guy-paid-for-it version of a thing that's usually made by a giant corporation. He says, I'm not complaining at all. I'm just telling you the facts. And the reason I charge you $5 is because I need to recoup some of the cost in order for us to stay in production. And so he's staying in production. He's making more episodes. If you haven't seen the first one, you can pay $5 from that. And then the second episode will be $2. And then the episodes after that will be $3.
Back to normal.
What do you think of this economic model?
Why not? I mean, if people like the show, now what could be really disappointing with this and the reason... companies do this. FX, for example, is a good example of a show, of a station that will take low ratings and ride it out until there's a good audience. AMC did that with Breaking Bad. The reason you do that is because you defray the cost. Now, let's say 100,000 people download this first episode. Okay. That's $500,000.
Okay.
Let's say by the time the fourth episode rolls around, that's down to 20,000 people, yeah, and he's only bringing in $60,000 an episode. Is he able to still make money or lose less money? He could just end it partway through because, from what we understand, they're making them as we're watching them.
Yeah.
So it's risky because you could have a lot of spurned fans who say, well, I wanted to see the end of it.
He may have had 100,000. He might have had 1 million people. He has so many people on his list. Let's say he had 1 million people. So he made $5 million from the first one. Mm-hmm. But when he releases the second one tomorrow, instead of 1 million downloads, he could get, like you said, 20,000 downloads.
And there's always going to be that small group of just jerks, let's call them, who will pay the $3 and then put it up somewhere for free. And this is where it really gets to me.
Yeah.
Because piracy is a convoluted thing. It means different things to different people. But in this case, where he's saying, I'm getting no other money for this. I'm not advertising, nothing.
Yep.
You're stealing. There's no other way to put it.
Of course, he doesn't have the overhead that a studio does, and he doesn't have the promotional budget or any of that. He has the cost of the actors and the sets and the crew and the equipment and all that sort of stuff. But how long can you sustain that? I don't think this economic model works, and here's why. Not because Louis doesn't do quality stuff. You can debate whether this show is worth your time or not. The question is, can a society that now is used to getting stuff for free... Mm-hmm. Are we going to pay for this? Now, if you're a Netflix person and you're paying them, what is it, $8 or $9 a month?
$9 a month now.
$9 a month. You can watch as much Netflix stuff as you want streaming into your house. You watch something and you get 20, 30 minutes into it. Oh, this stinks. Turn it off. Let's watch something else.
Yes.
You know, you can binge watch an entire series. Doesn't cost you any more money. You could watch one movie a month. You could watch 100 movies a month. You still pay $9. Yeah. If you're an Amazon Prime member, you pay the $99 a year, you get the free shipping, you also get Amazon Music, and you get Amazon Video. And mm-hmm. again, you can watch as much of the stuff that they make available to you. There's plenty of stuff there. Like, there's a TV show that was on a couple of years ago called Justified, which I never watched, but people told me good things about it. I think you mentioned good things about it. So I've downloaded episodes of Justified, because Amazon lets you download it.
Yes.
And I don't have to stream it. So if I'm traveling, I can have it on my iPad, and I can watch it while I'm on the plane. That's a cool thing to do. But I can try it that way because it doesn't cost me any more above and beyond. I don't know that I would pay $2, $3, $5 an episode a show.
Well, so let's say this is only part of the battle. Let's say he's committed to saying, you know, if I get 50,000 viewers an episode, I can sustain those losses because... For all we know, he's talking already with FX or Netflix or Amazon to say, buy this on the backside, and you can start showing it in 6 months. And when it's all done,
you can
have it in 6 months because I've proven that there's an audience for it, and then he can use that money to finance a new show.
Yeah, but if he does that and people find out, they'll never pay the $2, $3, or $5 because if they have Netflix, they'll get to watch it later on.
Well, they will because he'll say, you got to see it first. This is the only way to see it. People buy new iPhones every year. Mm-hmm. I'm not worried about someone paying $5 for it to be the first to watch something. I think there's enough people out there who say, I want to be the first, have the bright, new, shiniest thing. I'm going to watch the newest Louis C.K. stuff.
And we know that there's no way a TV show could stay on the air with that small a number of viewers. But no. in this economic...
Well, I don't know. MSNBC... pushes that line every day.
You know what? There are other cable channels out there that I don't. You know, there's a channel called Pivot. I don't know what it is. I don't know what they have, but I can't imagine how they stay in business.
Someone with one leg shorter than the other, just walking all day.
I've never stopped on that channel, so I don't know what they have. But I don't think anybody watches them. But these channels still manage to stay on the air. So if Louis can do this, and he's getting about the number of viewers as the lowest rated TV networks. I guess he's accomplished something, but it's not going to be called a hit.
No, but for him, I think this is just, can I get my artistic vision out there uncompromised?
Yeah.
And that might be what it is. I'm going to watch it at some point here. I just don't know that it's something I'm going to go home and watch tonight.
Well, when you do watch it, let me know, because I'm interested in what you think and whether you think it was worth the $5.
I want to give you an update
on it. And by the way, you get it on louisck.net.
Yes. And I wanted to mention a show that I told you I would watch, the Zach Galifianakis, Louis C.K. produced
Baskets.
Show. Baskets.
With him as a rodeo clown. I've got 1 minute. Can you do it in 1 minute?
I can do it in 1 minute. It, much funnier than I thought it was going to be. Much less cringeworthy in the first episode. And Zach Galifianakis actually plays himself and his twin brother. And Louis Anderson plays his mother. The best character may be
Louis Anderson plays his mother?
Yes, and it's funny. It's just, it's weird funny, though. You've got to be willing to go for a weird show, but it's much funnier than I thought it was going to be. And through 2.5 episodes, I'm enjoying it.
All right, one final thing. Remember 2 weeks ago, I predicted Tina Fey would be on Saturday Night Live because Sarah Palin had come out, and sure enough, she did. I'm predicting right now, Bernie Sanders will be on SNL tomorrow night because Larry David is the host.
Yes.
Mark my words.
I'll watch.
All right, that's our showbiz segment for this week. Thanks, Colin.
Thank you.